Blog Talk Radio.
Did you know there's a secret place to expand your mind? A place to escape the same old negative news? Welcome to Colombo Chronicles Live with Rose Colombo, award-winning author, cable TV and radio host, poet, and advocate for justice. Rose has been seen and heard on local and national TV and radio. She's consulted with victims of injustice for more than 20 years. Her articles have been published in major and local newspapers and magazines. Listen live as Rose Colombo welcomes prominent authors and experts to her podcast every Wednesday from noon to 1 p.m. Pacific time at blogtalkradio.com/Colombo Chronicles. You can call in and ask questions at 646-564-9742. Follow Rose Colombo every Wednesday from 12 noon to 1 p.m. on Colombo Chronicles Live at blogtalkradio.com/Colombo Chronicles.
Colombo Chronicles Live. Colombo is on their trail. Listen up at Colombo Chronicles Live.
Hi, everyone. This is the Rose, Rose Colombo, right here for you. It's Wednesday, January 2nd, and Happy New Year. I wish everyone in the world prosperity and health, financial security, shelter, food, clothing, peace in the world, and a free world. People can come up with their own choices and exercise their free will in every country in the world to make it a better place for all people, so that we do not have millions of people migrating from their own homelands in fear of their own governments, dictatorships, or tyrannical laws. So that's what we pray, no matter who you pray to. We pray for world peace, right? We pray for the preservation of the earth to be restored. It is deteriorating right before our very eyes, if you pay attention and you do your homework and your research. You can't get everything off of the news. You must read books, and you must also do your own research, which now you have the internet, which is fairly new, and we're still learning about the internet. And we have people who attempt to suppress information on the internet as well. So we really have to be alert and awake and vigil, and not just believe everything we read on the internet, but also we read in books. And today we are going to be inviting a very special guest and welcoming him back to our show. And I'm really excited to do that because he is an expert and a professional when it comes to political observations and insight. And he is the author of 75 books. And you will not want to miss this interview because he just returned from Europe. And he has a lot of information and insight into what's happening over there. In fact, I returned from Europe in May in 2018, my first trip to Europe. I love Europe. I mean, I love America first, but I love Europe. I would love to stay in Europe and visit more countries. The architecture, the masterpieces, the statues, the unbelievable buildings and churches and cathedrals and castles. And it's like going back into time, into history, and spending a month there is not enough time to see and take in everything, although we probably have 10,000 pictures. And it's really funny because when you go through the pictures, you're like, oh, I didn't even remember that. Oh, yeah, we were there. Oh, and we were there. Or when you see a movie or you're looking at a documentary, you were there. And it's so much different than if you're not there and you're only looking at pictures. So if you ever get a chance to visit Europe and some of your favorite countries, make your dream come true. Spend the money and go. You only live one time, right? You don't get to come back and do this again. And so we pray that Europe, at least I do, I pray that Europe maintains its sovereignty of every country, its civilization, its history, its uniqueness, its way of life, its clothing, its foods, its their special personalities and their wonderful, wonderful art and architecture. It's every country is different and every country is unique and wonderful, absolutely marvelous. You must visit Europe if you possibly can and see everything you possibly can see, because who knows if you're ever going to get back there again. So at least do it once. Spend the money and go and make your dream come true. And now I'm going to tell you a little bit about our guest. I'm going to take a break, and we're going to come back, and I'm going to tell you about our returning guest, fabulous guest, Godfrey Harris. And I will be back in just a moment.
Howdy, folks. Just stopped in by my favorite restaurant, the Horseshoe Cafe. I highly recommend the home-cooked hot meals and piping hot coffee. In fact, it reminds me of my mom's home cooking when I was growing up. The customer service is excellent. Be sure to save room for the world's best desserts. Make sure you try a slice of fresh homemade pie. The Horseshoe Cafe is located at 154 East 4th Street in the heart of Benson, Arizona. The Horseshoe Cafe is right outside of Tombstone, Sierra Vista, and Tucson. Sometimes Patty and Mike stop by to welcome you. The staff at the Horseshoe Cafe looks forward to seeing you. Stop by to eat or relax. Cool down in the desert with a cold beer or your favorite cocktail. That's the Horseshoe Cafe. Oh, and don't tell anyone I told you, but some people think it's haunted. One thing is for sure. Be sure to bring your appetite.
Keeping up with the news these days is like keeping up with the car. Well, you get the idea. There's a lot of yelling and screaming. Intelligent discussion, not so much. Ready for something refreshing, thought-provoking, and friendly? Okay, grab your favorite hot or cold drink, sit down, and listen to a friendly voice. The Columbo Chronicles Live with Rose Columbo on Blog Talk Radio. Every Wednesday night at 8 on the West Coast, or 11 for anyone sleepless on the East Coast, Rose Columbo welcomes dynamic authors and experts on a myriad of human interest topics, from politics to love, the environment, the mafia, healthcare, and more. It's 60 minutes of original entertainment and intriguing information with the top VIP guests. Senator John DeCamp exposing the Franklin cover-up, Dr. Tony O'Donnell, the herb doc, Dr. Alan Keyes discussing the White House. So, from Rose Columbo's home on the Columbo Chronicles Live to your home, Columbo says she doesn't want to have to send the familia to make sure you are listening.
Columbo Chronicles Live. Columbo is on their trail. Listen up at Columbo Chronicles Live.
Hi, everyone. We're back on Columbo Chronicles Live. You're listening to The Rose, Rose Columbo, and we're just about to enter into the world of authors and experts. We have a fabulous author with us, and he's returning, from Europe as well. And his name is Godfrey Harris. And he's written 75 books. And one of the books we're going to be talking about is Lobbycratic Governance. And that is going to be very exciting. And Credit the Crocodile as well. So let me tell you a little bit about Godfrey Harris. Godfrey Harris has been with us before, as I stated. And some of you may remember the broad outlines of his background. He taught political science and comparative government at UCLA and Rutgers. He was in the U.S. Army during the Cold War as an intelligence officer and later served as a U.S. Foreign Service officer with diplomatic assignments in Bonn, London, and Washington. After serving in President Lyndon Johnson's executive office As a policy analyst on foreign and commercial affairs, he became a public policy consultant. He is still doing that work 50 years later after he left government service. For the last 5 years, he has concentrated on trying to prevent international and domestic restrictions on the trade of ivory objects. He simply does not believe that stopping trade in ivory will end the danger to elephant populations. He points to prohibition as an example of when a restriction leads to increased use of the very substance allegedly being controlled. We'll talk about that in a moment, but I should also tell you that Mr. Harris has written more than 75 books, as I stated, on public policy and business topics, and we hope to get into some of his most recent writing as well. Godfrey Harris has just returned from a business trip to the United Kingdom and Germany, which has been in the news quite often now, involving development strategies to employ during the upcoming convention of the parties to the International Treaty on Endangered Species. Because he was in Europe during the height of the Brexit debate in the UK and EU, his insights as a professional political observer are particularly interesting. So let's get started, because we have a lot to talk about. And first of all, Godfrey Harris, I want to wish you a very happy new year, and thank you for being on Colombo Chronicles and starting our show off in the new year with your insight and your professional political expertise.
Well, that's very kind of you, and I will extend your kind greetings and wishes to your listening audience. I hope we all have a beneficial and interesting year ahead for all of us.
Oh, thank you so much. Me too. And one of the questions that I want to get started with is, because you just returned from Europe, is could you please tell us what you observed about Brexit? Everyone's interested in Brexit, and how this may have an impact on the United States of America.
Well, Brexit, as your listeners know, is the decision by the people of the United Kingdom to leave the European Union. Because for the last 40 years, England has been an integral part of the 27-nation union, separating is much more difficult than voters believed when they voted 2 years ago to leave the European Union and what became called Brexit, the exit of Britain from the European Union. What we have now is a lot of buyer's remorse. My observation is that most of the people who voted against the European Union, who voted to leave the European Union, were really sending a message to Whitehall that they were tired of being ignored. They were tired of responding to the dictates of a large number of bureaucrats, whether they're in Brussels or in London, and they really demanded a more responsive government in the democracy they were led to believe their country sponsored. 2 years later, reality sets in. The message they were passing, it turns out, has little to do with the details of separating the UK from the EU. And what was most interesting to me was the fact that there were, at the time of the Brexit vote in 2016, dozens of debates, editorials, op-ed pieces in the newspapers, lots of discussion, and not one public item can be pointed to the issue that has divided the UK and split it badly to the point where we don't know, as we talk today on the 2nd of January, how Britain will actually leave. What was that topic? The topic was the division between Northern Ireland and Ireland. When the UK, like now, is part of the European Union, then people in Britain or Northern Ireland, which is a part of the United Kingdom, can pass to and from the Republic of Ireland without restriction, without a problem. When the EU and the UK separate, then the United Kingdom and Northern Ireland become a separate entity, much like the United States is to the European Union. And the kind of intercourse, commercial intercourse, between Northern Ireland and the Republic of Ireland, which has been vibrant in the last 20 years, shrivels, because now there'll be a border, there'll be a customs requirement, there'll be passports to and visas to get between Northern Ireland and the Republic of Ireland. And this issue has totally flummoxed the British leadership, the European Union leadership, and the people of the United Kingdom and Northern Ireland. They really want to retain the connection between Ulster, Northern Ireland, and the Republic of Ireland, and they don't know how to do it and yet separate the UK from the EU. That has, and of course, this was never discussed. This wasn't even an issue. Nobody ever thought that this would be a problem or a serious concern at the time of the vote. So now there is a strong demand for a second referendum, a redo, a chance to go back for the people and say, okay, we're coming to the end of our connection to the EU. Do we really want to separate, or do we really want just a change in the relationship between the UK and the EU? Just today, for example, pressure within the Labour Party to favor a new referendum has arisen, and up to now the Labour Party leadership has refused to comment on it, but the people are pushing. So where does that leave us? It leaves us with, if you're a political junkie like I am, a fascinating situation in which nobody knows how it will be resolved. Everybody's idea is as good as the other person's. And for the United States, which has enormous trade with the EU and enormous trade with the UK, we are not quite sure, because the UK will have no customs, haven't passed the laws, don't know what the tariffs will be, what the restrictions will be. We know nothing about how to deal with the UK after separation, if it does come on March 29th, and we have no idea how the EU will react to it, what markets will do, what the financial community will do. And so I found it a fascinating moment to be in Europe, both in Germany, where the debate is as strong as in the UK. So I just wish your listeners would pay a lot more attention to this issue, because our press is not, they don't understand it, they don't write about it, and we probably won't even become involved until it's way too late, which is the last week of March, when the reality of Brexit will be upon the world.
So
I apologize. That was a long answer. Okay,
no,
ask the next
actually,
question and I'll be shorter.
No, you don't have to, because these things are important. They're important to the American people. They're important to our imports, exports. They're important to our relationships, our communication with these countries. I mean, the whole world is upside down right now. So in my opinion, you know, you explained something so clearly that most of us never really understood. We just heard the word Brexit, big deal, EU, big deal. So I want to ask you this question, if you don't mind. What was the difference between America's relationship and the countries in the EU before the EU was created?
Well, that takes us back to World War II. The EU is an outgrowth, as all your listeners may remember, of the European Coal and Steel Community, which was formed in 1946 to try to find a way to bring back European industry that was decimated by the bombings of World War II. France, Luxembourg, Germany, the UK, France, all had six countries, all Netherlands, I didn't mention, or Belgium, but those were the original six, and they formed this coal and steel community to rationalize this basic industry, its regrowth, and its conduct within the six countries as well as to the world beyond. It was revolutionary, but it would stop some of the competition that between among all these countries that was part of the buildup to World War II. The common market grew, European common market, as it was called, grew out of the six countries that formed the coal and steel community. The common market represented 12 countries, and the UK was brought into the common market. And then the common market morphed into the European Union, now consisting of 27 states, with what neither the coal and steel community or the common market had, a common currency, the euro. And the combination of a federal-style state, a central government unit, it didn't quite become the United States of Europe, which is the next step, but it was an attempt to form a more unified entity within Europe to compete with the United States. And in fact, the economy of the European Union, the 27 countries that now comprise the 28, it'll be 27 if the UK leaves, and we don't know that. We may have a vote and they may vote to stay. But those 27 countries, their combined economy is now larger than the United States. And so we are competing with the EU in a very real way. And the realist way, to use that word, is to realize that the United States owns the international aircraft business before the EU was formed. In those days, Boeing and McConnell Douglas built all the airplanes that flew internationally around the world. They were absolutely dominant. Now, Boeing, McDonnell Douglas is no longer in the passenger aircraft business, only doing defense work. But Boeing, as our principal representative in the international airline business, has heavy competition from the European Airbus. And an American traveler going to Europe today is as likely, even on an American carrier, to fly a Airbus plane as he is to fly a Boeing plane. I just use that as an example of how the European Union became such a major economic force and became competition for the United States. But the problem is, and I'll jump to the book that I think some of your audience, if they like the kind of discussion you and I have had, would be interested in, is the book Lobbycratic Governance. And the title was chosen explicitly. What it means is what the theme of the book is, that in today's world, in the United States, in Brussels for the EU, in London for that matter, government is controlled by a combination of powerful lobbyists and senior technocrats working for the government. And those two strong entities, lobbyists and technocrats, working high-level bureaucrats, in other words, and very wealthy representatives of large organizations or corporations or institutions, those lobbyists and those bureaucrats together create the policy that the governments adopt and we have to follow. A good example of that is, you mentioned I worked for Lyndon Johnson. In my time, Lyndon Johnson, in his 5 or 6 years as president, passed 90-plus major pieces of legislation. By the time you got to Clinton, he passed one. Bush passed one. Obamacare, passed one major piece of legislation. And Mr. Trump has passed one, his tax reform. And he probably won't pass any more. And Obama didn't expect to pass any more and didn't. All the changes that Mr. Obama made, Mr. Bush made, Mr. Clinton made, and Mr. Trump made are to the regulations that implement the laws we have. And when you get regulations rather than legislation to be the principal means of governing, that's when you open the door to lobbyists and technocrats who together then create the regulations and, in effect, the political elected representative is cast into a role equivalent to a concierge or a maitre d'. He's out there. He takes all the glory. He smiles. He gets elected, but he has no power because he needs the money to run for office that the lobbyist provides. Well, if the elected official doesn't respond to the lobbyist's needs, then no money transfers to that political campaign. Every politician in Washington, London, and Brussels soon learns that their job is quite different and that their influence is on the margins. So my book, Lobbycratic Governance, which describes how we got here, what it involves, how powerful it is, and how different lobbycratic governance is to the government that all of your listeners were taught in the 11th grade, or if they didn't go to high school here, they learned it in citizenship class. What we teach in the 11th grade or in citizenship class has no relationship to how government actually works today. The book, Lobbycratic Governance, explains that and has a very substantial section that talks about how we get out of this problem, how the people of the United States regain the governance that they used to control, how we get back to what Lincoln wanted, which was a government of the people, by the people, and for the people. We don't have that now. And the book describes not only how we got in the mess, but how we get out.
I agree with you because we are totally regulated. I mean, we are like controlled and spied upon and targeted. And I mean, we are like living in the twilight zone right now. And so it does appear that the lobbyists and the wealthy Wall Street gurus are running our lives. And I am totally, totally recommend your book.
Thank you so much. The book describes how all those rich people operate, how the power is transferred. You think about the scientists who look at the brain. Well, how does an idea get transferred from the brain, developed there, and then articulated in language? What I attempted to do was to look at how a rich individual or a large corporation or an important institution like the University of California or an organization like the American Cancer Society, all these groups, how they, for their advantage, and how they transfer their ideas to the bureaucracy, and the bureaucracy creates the regulations that then guide us. And the politicians who we spend so much time talking about, Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer and what all these people are going to do, that's all a sideshow. That isn't government. The people who are running government, who set the taxes, who make the tariffs, who decide what's legal and what isn't legal, have nothing to do with what the newspapers cover, because they're operating inside this lobbycratic government that we now have. So
behind
it's an interesting story. Pardon?
Oh, I said behind closed doors.
Oh, for sure. This does not sneak into the newspapers, but I have collected example after example. Just one example. Right Current. Every one of your listeners knows that the Secretary of Defense, General Mattis, resigned and then was told to pack his boxes and leave by the 1st of January by the president, who didn't like his resignation letter. Okay. The acting Secretary of Defense, who is the current Deputy Secretary of Defense, but the guy making all the decisions for us, was for 30 years the lobbyist in Washington for the Boeing Corporation. So if you want an example of lobbycratic governance coming to the fore, it is to realize that the guy that did all the working on the inside now is in control. He doesn't have to mess around with anybody. He knows where all the levers are. He knows where all the technocrats are. He knows the kind of regulations he needs to write to benefit his former employer and who he hopes will be his future employer. And those things will happen, and you and I will never read about it because nobody reads the Federal Register. But the Federal Register, printed daily by the U.S. government, is where all these regulations come up. Oh, yes, we get to comment on them, but the comments don't have to be by the bureaucracy. So they listen. It's a little bit like Twitter. It's a little bit like Facebook. A lot of background noise. But they do what they want to do, what they need to do to benefit the people that are either going to pay their salaries or did pay their salaries in the past, whether in a law firm or in a corporate setting.
And as we know,
Sorry.
Go ahead. Oh, go ahead.
I was just about to say, I get kind of passionate on this because it's all going on and the average person is only talking about who's running for president, like it matters. to the swamp, it doesn't matter who's the president. That's more noise out there. As long as you got noise, as long as you got the press worrying about Kellyanne Conway and whether she is doing what the president wants or is acting on her own or any of the other stories that make the nightly news, the lobbyists are delighted. It keeps everybody's attention away from the way real government is being organized today. And so my book, I think, Lobbycratic Governance, and I could add here, if I might, it's published by the Americas Group, three words, the Americas Group. And you can find it on Amazon, if you care to have a copy and see what I have to say, or you can buy it directly from the Americas Group, which is americasgroup.com, and www.americas, plural, group, one word, .com, and that leads you to lobbycratic governance.
I agree. I think that just about everyone in America needs to read it and wake up to the truth about why we're seeing ourselves so regulated, so spied upon, so targeted, so ignored. And why they're laughing at us when we are attempting to say, hey, why are these criminals being let go? And why is the guy who didn't pay his traffic ticket getting 10 years in jail? Well, this person actually committed espionage, breach of national security, breach of national security trust, perjured themselves, lied to the American people. Americans died. Americans were killed because of your gross negligence reduced to carelessness, like you spilled a glass of milk. I mean, we are witnessing all of these serious felonies being reduced to carelessness. And believe me, that's one of my passions, where I see this, what you call lobbycratic, part of that, because they are being self-protecting, self-disciplining, self-policing, and they are giving each other a pass out of punishment in jail, where the average person does not have that, same white glove swiping.
But what I'm saying, Rose, which is not in any way disagreeing with what you're saying, but what I'm saying to your listeners and to the American people through this book, Lobbycratic Governance, is we have to stop talking about mum-chumming about the swamp, complaining about the way the government is working or the way they are handling the problems you just described, and we have to do something. We have the capability of changing the direction we're going in. We haven't changed it yet, and it won't happen by electing somebody president, because the bureaucracy will control that president in the same way they control the Congress, the House, and the Senate. The only way we can take charge is to force elections to make choices. And when we make our choices known at an election time, not between Democrat or Republican, but between pledges of individual politicians, then I think we people will make a difference, and we people will start reclaiming the government. And how that can be done, I think rather successfully, and I think rather quickly, is all revealed in the final chapters of the book, Lobbycratic Governance.
That's fantastic, and I believe that proactiveness is the key, too. I totally agree with you, and I hope everyone gets a copy of your book and reads it and then takes action, because we're looking at our kids and grandkids, and what are we leaving behind? I mean, seriously, for future generations. This should be frightening to every American.
Well, I agree with you, and I think it can be done. I think it's all our responsibility. If people think we have a responsibility to serve on a jury, we have a responsibility to send our kids to school, if we have a responsibility to get vaccinated against communicable diseases, then I believe we have a responsibility to vote. And I want to make that vote count. And it's easy to do, but we need people to get involved. They don't have to leave their couches. They don't have to give money, but they have to commit their spirit to this movement to grab hold of the government and say, hey, that belongs to us. It belonged to our grandparents, and we want to give it to our grandchildren in the way it was intended, and not the way you guys, lobbycrats and senior bureaucrats, have taken it from us. But that brings me up to my other topic, because it's the same sort of thing. But if your listeners can stand to segue, I'd love to talk about wildlife in Africa and what's happening.
Absolutely.
There.
I know. Although it's we didn't get to the subject yet, but I know that the reason, one of the main reasons you went to Europe, of course, involves relations of Western countries with Africa, and it involves the well-being of herds of elephants, and it involves Western charities and some of the most recognized celebrities in the world. So what does all that mean to us, and what's going on?
Well, it is another passion of mine that organizations, and there are two principal ones, these are organizations that are related to the United Nations and are not well known by the average person. They are well known to people like me because I was a delegate at one time of the United States to the International Whaling Commission. That's a UN agency that sets quotas and protects species of whales so that their populations in the various oceans can return to a level where they can sustain themselves, that the number of whales taken out of the ocean for either research or food or oil can be replenished by the remaining whales in the ocean. What we are going for is sustainability, but that organization, International Whaling Commission, and the Secretariat of CITES, that's the Convention on International Trade in Endangered Species. So the Whaling Commission takes care of whales. CITES takes care of all the other wild animals to prevent their extinction or extermination, but allow for trade in those animals because they form such an important part of the diet and the economy of so many countries in the world. And just last Monday, the Japanese stood up and said they were leaving their membership in the International Whaling Commission because they were tired of the lobbyists representing the animal rights groups. They were tired of those groups determining the policy of this international body of the United Nations. How do the animal rights groups control the International Whaling Commission? Well, the Japanese pointed out that the animal rights groups pay for delegates to attend the Whaling Commission meetings, and the last one was in an obscure island off the coast of southern Brazil, way south of Sao Paulo. It was impossible to get to for most countries, but the animal rights groups, that's the world I only know them by their initials, so I got to spell them out. The World Wildlife Fund, the International Fund for Animals, the Humane Society of the United States, the Natural Resources Defense Council, and other such organizations put up the money so that these countries could send delegates to this obscure Brazilian island to vote the way the animal rights groups want in the body. And the Japanese got so tired of it, they quit. They said, we're out of here. We're going to do our own thing. And so we are coming up to anarchy because the lobbyists in these international organizations have been so successful. So I wrote a book called Credit the Crocodile. It is a novel, and it's a cute story that gives the reader a very easy introduction to the international conservation issues that the world faces. How do you save elephant populations? How do you save rhinos from poachers and from other illegal hunting? And the book talks about all these issues, but in a story form, in a novel sense, and it's got very strong reviews. It's very cute. It's not expensive. And it's called Credit the crocodile. And the essence of that story is that a farmer's son saw a clutch of crocodile eggs hatching in a incubator, and the first crocodile out of the 54 eggs in this clutch looked out of the shell and, he thinks, winked at him. So he snatches up the crocodile and takes it to his room and makes this crocodile a pet. And he is continually talking to the crocodile, and the crocodile eventually figures out that this stream of sound has meaning, and that if he only puts his mind to it, he'll figure out what all those sounds mean. And very shortly, the crocodile learns to understand English, but of course he can't speak it, but he understands it. And the story goes on that three Americans representing some of these big international organizations get in trouble in a African village trying to foment a demonstration to free these crocodiles from farms and put them back in the wild where they began and where they were endangered. And credit the crocodile, the one that's learned how to understand English, sets his mind in helping these American teenage boys who ran afoul of the law to survive in the African wild. So it's a fun story. It engages a lot of kids, but it also tells a real story about how all of us ought to be involved in the sustaining of wildlife in the world, because we are not doing a job now, and if we keep doing what we're doing now, we will see the end of wildlife in the wild by the end of this century. They are not surviving, and they're not surviving because the policy stinks. And the policy is being set by the animal rights groups, and they do not want any human use of an animal. And as long as they do that, the animals are going to, because they clash with the humans in Africa, and when they clash with the humans do not spend but a moment deciding to kill the animal, because, and that's the policy that we're fighting so desperately, and it's a very tough road, but the book deals
with
those
issues. Is it for adults and children?
Yeah.
Is the book?
Well, teenagers, not children. I mean, children can understand it if an adult reads it to them, but the book is really aimed at teenagers. That's how we wrote it, but we got so many positive things from adults that we decided we probably shift the marketing so that adults understand that this is a book for them, to teach them in a very friendly, fun story the issues of international conservation.
Yes, and the bottom line is survival, because it's all about survival, because we all have to live on this earth, on this planet. And so the bottom line actually is not only survival of the crocodiles, the survival of animals and birds and bees and everything else, insects, it's the survival of mankind, isn't it?
For sure. But 60 Minutes just did a piece on the reintroduction of the wolf into Yosemite. And they showed a very tough segment where the wolves in the pack bring down a very large elk, and the pack, of course, needs the elk to feed. But for a lot of people, that's very sad that this elk was attacked by these wolves. But the story is that when the elks did not have a natural predator in Yellowstone, they took over the park. And in taking over the park, they ate all the vegetation and the trees, and the trees started dying. The introduction of the wolf starts to thin out the elk population. And in so doing, the trees survive because now their leaves are not being eaten to death. And when the trees survive, the songbirds return. And when the songbirds return, various grasses, the bees come back, the flowers come back, etc.
Well, that's really, really, interesting and intriguing.
And that's what we want to do in Africa.
Exactly. Yeah. And so that brings awareness to the American people. So, and people around the world. So
it's
let's
reality,
talk about your book,
Rose.
It is reality, definitely.
Right,
definite
and that's if the people listening to this program get nothing else out of it, whether they're discussing with their friends or their relatives the initial discussion we had about Brexit or the subsequent discussion we had about lobbycratic governance or this discussion about wildlife in Africa, the one message that I hope they will take away is get real. Look at the situation as it is, not as you hope, not as you were taught, not as somebody tells you, but the reality of what's going on now. And once they get a feel for reality through the books that we've discussed, Lobbycratic Governance or Credit the Crocodile, then they can begin to take action to change things and make things better.
Yes, and I think, you know, it is important for teenagers. My grandson, he's 14, and he loves to read. So I'm gonna definitely send him a copy of that book, he gets it. So I think there's a lot of teenagers out there that get it, that are smart and get it. And so I'm definitely going to do that, and I suggest everyone do that too, because it's with these young minds that we need to tell the truth and open their eyes, expand their minds so they can use their free will, their free choice, and they're at ages where they are researching and looking for information and wanting to learn. So the information you're providing is so invaluable, in my opinion, to help them see the reality and how the earth all works together, the countries all must work together, and we must be in balance with nature. Bottom line is, we must be in
Absolutely.
Balance with nature.
Absolutely.
So,
we are not now.
No,
we are
not
in balance.
We
are not, and we need to get there.
Yes, if we are going to, you know, help preserve sovereign nations and help preserve peace in the world and survival, where everyone is eating and has shelter and they can stay in their own countries without fear. I mean, these are the goals that, you know, we must at least leave behind, like in books like yours and the writings, so that the generations coming up can see the truth, because they're not going to get the truth from quick internet Googles and so forth. They're going to have to read, and I think bringing reading back is so important, and to our young people and to adults as well, to incorporate it all so they can open their minds. So if our listeners wanted to find out what you suggest can be done, as you said, in your wonderful book, Lobbycratic Governance, or Credit the Crocodile. Do you have a website as well Amazon?
I mentioned it before. Our website is www.americasgroup. That's America with an S, and group joined with it in one word, americasgroup.com. And or if they just put in Credit the Crocodile or Lobbycratic Governance, they will be directed by Google to the appropriate page on our website or on Amazon, and they can obtain the book.
Perfect. And if you had a message to leave with our audience now that we're ending our, unfortunately, ending the show, what would that message be?
The message is, don't believe what you're told. Look for answers from people you trust or sources that you trust. But for the most part, what you are told, you are being sold, like you're being sold beans or cars. You're being told what the people who sponsor these actors want you to hear. And the best source for you is to find it out for yourself, to keep questioning, to keep looking to see among people you trust whether what you hear, what you see, what you read, and what you learn is correct. Do it for yourself. Nobody is going to do it for you in the way that you can do it for yourself. And it's worth the effort, because the fun of discovery, the exhilaration of finding out that you've been sold a bill of goods and sharing that information with those who are interested is a terrific high. Better than anything you drunk on New Year's Eve, in fact. Thank you, Rose. I appreciate the time, and I love to talk with you, and I hope we do it soon again.
Me too, Godfrey Harris, and God bless you, and Happy New Year. Bye-bye.
Thank you so much. Bye.
And thank you who are listening to this New Year's show. It's our New Year's show, January 2nd, 2019. And we are fortunate to be able to have our fabulous guest, Godfrey Harris, on our show. I want you to be sure to give a gift. Read it yourself and give it as a gift, because that's what I'm going to do. My granddaughter is in a university right now studying political science, and my grandson is genius, straight A student, woohoo! And I'm going to give him these two books, Lobbycratic Governance or Credit the Crocodile. And you can also find them on Amazon.com. And I suggest you do that, because we need to really look beyond what we're being told. Of course, I hardly believe anything on MSM. I don't even watch it hardly at all, because it's just bashing, just a lot of bashing and entertainment. That's all you're getting. You're getting a lot of entertainment and bashing, and we're not getting any substance. We're not getting the truth, and we're not getting substance. That's why I do this show every Wednesday from noon to 1 p.m. with prominent guests from around the world, who are authors, experts, community leaders, politicians, people who have something to say. You don't have to agree with them, but you're going to go away with something that you didn't think about before. You're going to go away with some information, whether it's on health, whether it's on relationships, whether it's on the government, whether it's on the mafia, corruption, constitution. I can go on and on. We've had just about everybody who has something to say on Colombo Chronicles and on my former shows, because I was on AMFM radio, and I've been on AMFM radio for many years, beginning in 1989. Good grief, the time flies, but I haven't gotten any older, so that's not a problem. And of course, with the new internet, you can do the podcast now that reach worldwide. So you can also go to www.rose4justice, that's the number 4, rose4justice.com, and you can find my blogs on just about any topic, beginning way back 9 years ago, and they're still important today, because none of these issues have been resolved, like our guest Godfrey Harris said. They're ongoing, because people can't get to the truth and get rid of the lobbyists controlling our country and regulating us, and they're strangling us with regulations. There are so many people moving out of New York and California, I can't even tell you, hundreds of thousands of residents who were born here, who have lived here most of their lives, are leaving because of the regulations that are strangling the businesses, strangling the residents and the taxpayers and the voters, and as they create these sanctuary cities with unidentified illegal people who are not inspected, who are not going through the ports of entry and are draining our economic system, our entitlement programs, our health care, our Social Security, our Medicare, and many have ripped us off by the millions from the SNAP programs and Medicare that MSM isn't even talking about. So if we're going to survive in our own country, we need to restore the republic and the rule of law for criminals, whether they have titles or they are wealthy or they are celebrities. It doesn't matter. The Constitution of the United States requires equality, and we are not seeing equality. And so until all these wealthy lobbyists who are working for wealthy corporations like Big Pharma are coming under our regulations, which is follow the rule of law and getting back to the three branches of government and checks and balances, we have no checks and balances. They have eliminated checks and balances. The Congress is not the same Congress any longer. It's not reading. They aren't reading. They didn't even read Obamacare. They didn't read all of the Iran deal that left us vulnerable to Iran. They're not reading. And they are not studying each mandate, regulation, punishment, penalty, tax. They are just rubber stamping laws that favor their party or the lobbyists, the people that pay into their campaigns. It appears. So on that note, I want you to think about all of that and tune in again, bookmark, follow Colombo Chronicles Live every Wednesday from noon to 1 p.m. with very prominent special guests who have something to say that you need to know. God bless you and Happy New Year.
Rose Colombo is signing off, and she's left the building. Be sure to bookmark and share Colombo Chronicles Live every Wednesday from 8 to 9 p.m. on the West Coast. Or if you're sleepless in the big city, that would be 11 to midnight on the East Coast. Rose Colombo says, remember, you're never alone when you tune in every Wednesday to Colombo Chronicles.